Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach.
You can do everything right. You can coach the right way and follow the rule, and you can win it at a really high level. You got to do things the right way.
The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and IMG, and is brought to you by Wilson Sporting Goods. And now your host, Coach Dave Odom.
Welcome to another edition of the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. We're really pleased to welcome in today's guest, the head coach of the University of Buffalo, Nate Oates. Coach, welcome in snowy and I'm sure cold Buffalo.
Yeah, there's a little snow on the ground out there. Appreciate you having me on, Dave. I'm looking forward to having a conversation with you here.
Well, it's probably cold outside, but it's warm in the gym, and that's why we play the games indoors this time of year.
Yeah, that's my recruiting pitch. We got three kids from Florida. The first time I get on with them all, that's why I let them know. I said it's the same temperature in the gym in Buffalo during basketball season as it is in Miami. So if you're worried about the outdoor temperature, you might be recruiting the wrong kids. So let me know right up front if you're trying to hang out on the beach or you're trying to get in the gym during basketball season. Usually they all tell me they want to be in the gym, so then we just eliminate the weather, deal with the recruiting here in Buffalo.
Well, I could see that being an advantage, really. I mean, whenever you get in the gym, you kind of lose yourself to the game, and, you know, the coaches are teaching, and I could see that being a real advantage, and I'm sure you're taking all advantage that they are at that point. As I was looking at your resume and your bio and everything, quickly, you became a coach after my own heart. Our early paths were very much the same. I mean, you went to a Division III school, Maranatha Baptist. I went to a small school in North Carolina, Guilford College. We both went into high school teaching and coaching, where my love, I could still go back to that today because, you have the kids, you don't have to worry about recruiting and all of that, and the kids are there for all the right reasons. And I really enjoyed my 11 years as a high school coach and teacher. I'm sure you did as well. And then, of course, you had a chance to go into college coaching as an assistant, Bobby Hurley, junior, that is. I want to talk about all of that. I want to talk about the beginning. You were playing at Maranatha. You enjoyed that. You had great success there. You had a captain of the team. Tell us about your experience early on.
Yeah, you're right. It is similar. And to be honest with you, you know, we haven't spoken before this, but I'm a big fan of yours. Kind of read, you know, long story ago, but I lost the game my first year at Romulus, so I got the head coaching job at 27 years old at Romulus in Detroit, and that's a long story how I got there. But we lose to a team that played a zone the whole game, and we were awful, and we had more talent, and I knew I got out-coached. So I got up all the zone offense stuff. So I had Dave Odom's zone offense. I had Rick Majere's zone offense. I'm still running plays from the VHS tape 15 years ago or however long it was that I had to figure out how to coach against the zone. I guess the good thing about being a high school coach for 11 years, you get to make a lot of mistakes without having the media all over you. You can kind of just learn and figure out what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, what you're comfortable with, without having everyone and their mom second guess you being under the spotlight like that. But yeah, I played Division III. My dad's a professor. He's got his PhD in theology, and so I went where he taught, and I had a ton of fun. Like my college teammates are my best friends still. I still talk to a handful of them, you know, on a weekly, monthly basis, depending on which one. So I wouldn't trade that for anything. You know, if some guys want advice how to get into coaching, it may be easier to get into Division I coaching by being a manager at a Division I school because you're already involved in Division I in college. But I personally wouldn't trade how I got here for anything. I played. I think it's helpful to have played no matter what level. Then I got right into coaching out of there. I coached at Maranatha for 3 years, and I moved up to a bigger Division III school, University of Wisconsin-Whitewater, for a couple of years. Then I had a college teammate of mine from Detroit, a guy named Ed Horn, that was teaching at Romulus High School. They convinced me to apply for an opening they had there. He helped me get the job. Me and my wife moved to Detroit with no family out there. I grew up in Wisconsin, and I lived in Wisconsin my whole life. I took the Rhymeless job, built it up over the course of 11 years, a lot of hard work, a lot of mistakes you learn from, and then fortunate enough that Bobby Hurley hired me here. And sometimes you got to get a little bit lucky. 2 years after I was an assistant, they named me the head coach, and we've been fairly successful here over the last 4 years.
Let's go back to that Romulus high school experience. I was looking up your resume this morning, and, I mean, your record is 222 wins and 52 losses. I mean, that's incredible in itself. You had a Class A state championship in 2013. And I know because I recruited Detroit and, you know, really the state of Michigan, there's really good basketball there.
No, it was great. I mean, to be honest with you, I walked into a situation where they had dismissed the previous coach. He was actually a decent coach, but the talent had been down. Like, they were losing. The people there maybe had unrealistic expectations. I don't know. Like, but it was good for me to come in as an outsider. I had nothing to do with the previous coach being let go or anything. So I walked into a situation where we had a lot of athletes, but I had one. I felt like I really only had like one true basketball player. I had a kid, Ryan Coleman, committed to Michigan. So I think we scored 35 points, 33 points maybe at the last game of my first year there. We actually won the conference tournament, but then we got into the state playoffs. And we just had problems scoring the ball. So what I decided then, like, we're going to spend – there's no limits as to the amount of time you can spend with the kids in the offseason. They only limited the amount of players you could – you know, you could work with four players at a time, but so we started doing 6 a.m. workouts. I took all the athletes we had, and I was bound and determined to turn them into basketball players that could shoot, dribble, pass, like skilled. So we just, you could outwork people. You could spend more time in high school. There was no regulations as the amount of time. So we came in at 6 a.m., then we worked out again after school. I had guys in on the weekends. We just started pouring everything we had into it, me and my assistant that had been my point guard at Maranatha, Josh Baker. We put everything we had into it. And then all of a sudden, my third year, we went to the state championship game with a bunch of kids that were on JV my first year. And we started buying those shooting machines, the guns. I ended up, they had none of them when I got there. When I left 11 years later, I left them with 6 guns. I just thought it was paramount with the athletes we had. We were going to spread the floor and let them beat people off the dribble. And if you couldn't shoot, people just pack it in on you. So we put a premium on shooting, and I'm still coaching at Buffalo pretty similar to how I was coaching when I left Romulus. Spread the floor out, play fast, let athletes be athletes, recruit athletes, spend a ton of time on skill development, and let players be players. And I think it's a fun way to play. I think it's a fun way to coach. I think with the way the game's moving, we were coaching that way 14, 15 years ago, and I think the game's moving that way now anyways.
You know, you were at Romulus for 11 years, and you had that fantastic record, and you won a state championship. You had to develop some really close ties with your players there. Do you still keep up with those players as much as you possibly can? I know they keep up with you.
I do, actually. I just texted one of them happy birthday today. I talked to another one that lived with me for a couple years, a kid, Valdez Green. I talked to him on the way into work this morning. Another one of them that played Division II is kid Derek Stewart. I love him to death. He made a highlight of, like, Buffalo highlights, like a minute long. He just put it on Instagram, like, yesterday, and all these Buffalo fans are reposting the highlight he made. So I was pretty tight with most of my players back then. We made it like a family atmosphere. You know, it was a way to get your family involved. My daughter went as a five-year-old. I remember they had, like, prom toast. So, like, one of the players took my daughter, like, as a five-year-old up the red carpet to prom toast. Like, it was a family atmosphere, which I try to emulate in college. It's just a lot harder in college. We still have the team over, and we do a lot of stuff together, and feel like we do a good job in college. But in high school, you got them every day in class. You've got them in the summer, they're playing. So it really was family atmosphere, and a lot of them are following Buffalo and our success. When we go back to play at Eastern Michigan, we'll have a lot of Romulus people there. I had one assistant, you may even remember his name, Stevie Glenn. He was teammates with Terry Mills back at Romulus.
Oh, yeah.
He played at Austin Peay. He's really good. He was my assistant for 11 years. I talked to Stevie this morning. He's still helping the program out and, you know, talking to me about what's going on there. So I feel like, you know, I grew up in Wisconsin, but I feel like Detroit's my second home after spending 11 years there. And got a lot of ties still back in Detroit.
I suspect Buffalo's kind of climbing that ladder as well as far as being home to you.
No question. The people here have really embraced my wife, myself, my kids. Like, this is where my kids have grown up. They were all born in Michigan, and I've got three girls, 14, 9, and 6. So this is my sixth year here. Obviously, the youngest one, this is all she's known. And the 9-year-old, pretty much the same thing. So it's kind of, you know, becoming more and more home, and we feel like it's home, and we'd love to stay here a long time. The weather's perfect in this. Like I tell everybody, you know, everybody wants to complain about Buffalo weather. Well, in my profession, I don't get to take vacation from basically when practice starts in the end of September, beginning of October through March. Like, that's when you're grinding and working. The time I can take vacation, the weather in Buffalo is as good as it is anyway. Like, in the summer weather here is perfect. So we love it in Buffalo here. And the communities, it's got more of a Midwest feel. The people are super nice. It's not that much different than what I grew up in Wisconsin, or spent 11 years in Michigan.
You have a player, E.C. Matthews at Romulus. You're pretty coaching young. The team. This young assistant comes in from Rhode Island, Bobby Hurley Jr., watches you coach. Rumor has it he liked what you were doing. You guys strike up a relationship. Next thing you know, he offers you a job as an assistant coach under him, and you go with him, and next thing you know, you're at Buffalo.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how that works. To be honest with you, the first contact I had with Bobby, me and Josh Baker, my assistant back at Romulus for the first 9 years, now he's running his own program. We used to go out to an NBA training camp or a college every fall before our practices would start, because NBA and college would start before us. Sometimes we'd do both. So, like, we went to Memphis when Hubie Brown, and I don't know if you ever went watched Hubie Brown, but he ran training camp almost like a coach's clinic. It was great. So we went there. I got to be friends with Brendan. We went to, where else did we go? Oh, we went to the Bulls when Scott Skiles was the head coach. We went out to Pepperdine when Vance Wahlberg first took over. We went to all different spots. So that was kind of our tradition we had done. So when Danny Hurley got hired at Wagner right out of St. Benedict, I said to Josh, like, let's try to go to Wagner. Like, he was coaching high school last year. I'm sure his dad will be out there. It's close to Jersey. Maybe we can go on a weekend when Bob Senior will be there. We can watch Danny run 3-4 practices, get down, talk to Bob Senior for a day or two. I think it'd be like the most productive thing we could do this year. So we both agreed, let's do it. So I call Wagner basketball offices. They don't have a secretary. Bobby Hurley answers the phone. So I explain to him what I want to do. He gives me his cell phone. We go back and forth trying to arrange a date. We never figured it out, because Bob Senior was never going to be there on a weekend that we could get there. So it didn't work out. So we ended up going somewhere else that year. But that was the first conversation I'd ever had with Bobby. And, you know, I'm a little bit younger than Bobby. I was a huge basketball fan growing up. So obviously Bobby's a huge name and, you know, still the all-time assist leader in college basketball history. So, we stayed in touch a little bit. But then when they get the Rhode Island job, Rhode Island had been recruiting E.C. Matthews, Preston Murphy, out with the previous staff. They kept Preston on. So then the recruiting really heated up then, because, you know, Danny Hurley's got a little bit bigger name. Bobby Hurley, best point guard to play in college, arguably. Now they want to coach E.C. up how to be a point guard. So then that recruitment takes off, and that's when I really developed a relationship with Danny and Bobby both, and I was fortunate enough. And that's, you know, a lot of people ask me, because I was only in Division I 2 years and then got a head job. Like, what do you do? And my answer is always just do the job you're doing right now really, really well. And then you also have to develop relationships. But it doesn't matter. Too many people spend so much time developing relationships and don't do the job they're doing very well. And there's not a whole lot of respect for guys that don't do the current job they're doing really well. That's not going to help you much. And then you got to be prepared once you get that chance to actually do the job that you get, whether it's the assistant coach Division I or any college level, or get a head coaching job like I was able to do 2 years after being assistant. I just think you put everything you got into the current job you have now, while keeping in mind you got to build these relationships, or return calls, go out of your way. Like I took EC on an unofficial visit out to Rhode Island. Well, if I hadn't done that, the kid would have never committed. I wouldn't have the job I have now, but that was kind of going back to the family deal. His dad wasn't involved very much at that time in his life. His mom wasn't going to make that trip, so I threw him in the car and drove him out. I took Wes Clark and EC both to UConn. We visited there. I took EC to Rhode Island. We visited there. I made, you know, a two-day trip out of it. We came home, but that's the stuff that I did as a high school coach, and eventually it paid off, and I was able to get to this level.
Let's kind of move forward just a little bit. I mean, obviously, you won a MAC tournament 2018. You go into the NCAA tournament. You play the first round game against Arizona. You know, not Arizona State where Bobby Hurley is now, but Arizona where Sean Miller is. You beat them. You advance to the second round. Your record right now at Buffalo is 82 wins, 39 losses, which is unbelievable. But you're off to a great start. You're 9-0. Tell us about your current team.
So we got five seniors. So we've got TJ Massenburg and Nick Perkins are two freshmen that were freshmen my first year as a head coach. So this, you know, they've kind of grown with me. I've learned, they've learned, super mature kids. So, I mean, they're an unbelievable group to coach. So then we added in the next year, Dante Carruthers was a junior college kid with 3 years to go. So I've got two seniors been with me 4 years. Dante's been with me 3 years. We added two junior college. We've been really successful with the junior college route. My assistant, Brian Hodgson, was a junior college coach, and he's the primary recruiter. And so we've got about half our rosters, junior college kids. And I think junior college kids get a little bit of a bad rap with some people. You know, some people say they won't recruit them. I think that's asinine. Different kids end up in different spots for different reasons. A lot of the junior college kids we've had were actually qualifiers and went Division One for whatever reason. They didn't work out. They went. So we've got Jeremy Harris, who's an unbelievable kid, really talented. He's like a 6'7", two guard that we start at the four. So he creates tons of mismatch nightmares. And we've been able to do that since I've been here. We had a kid, Blake Hamilton, who was also a junior college kid that was a 6'6", four-man that was really – we played him at the point guard his senior year. He was our starting four-man his junior year, first year with us out of junior college. He was our starting point guard at 6'6", his senior year. So we're able to kind of create mismatches. And then we got a big 6'10 kid, Montel McCray, that's leading the team in three-point percentage this year. So we've got a bunch of skilled players that we can space the floor with. I think we kind of embrace this whole blue-collar mentality, which fits in well here at Buffalo. We talk about blue-collar. We've got the blue-collar, like a hard hat, a construction hard hat we give out to whoever wins these. We call it the blue-collar points. We give different points for taking charges, floor dives, deflections, stuff that doesn't show up in a normal box score that we value here a big way, and so we reward it. So we've got a lot of guys that bought into it. I feel like we've got two guards. Kid Devontae Jordan's a junior that's been with us now for 3 years out of Florida. With Devontae, he was first team all defense last year. Dante Carruthers was defensive player of the year in the MAC the year before. So those two guards are as good of defensive guards as you'll see. And then we've got another guard that's real quick, Rondo Segu out of Orlando. So we've got really athletic guards that get into you on defense. You got pretty athletic bigs that can step out. Perkins hit three threes in the first half his freshman year against Miami when we got up on Miami in the NCAA tournament. He ended up leading us in scoring with 20 as a freshman. So he can knock down threes. Montel leads the team in three-point percentage. Those two both play the five and some four when we go big. So we're kind of fast, wide open, fun style. But on the defensive end, we're really gritty. We're 100% man-to-man and pressure the ball hard, kind of like you saw us play against Arizona. We didn't change a whole lot of what we did to go beat Arizona. That's who we are. We pressure the ball every day. We're going to get into you a little bit on defense, and that's kind of our mentality here.
You just got back from Ireland. You took your team over. You played a number of games over there. What was that all about? How did it happen? Why did you do that? What did you get out of it?
So the Hall of Fame is partnered with a group over there in Ireland that they run an MPE over there. This is the second year they've done it. Actually, Will Brown at Albany is the one that tipped me off. They need another team. So I was thankful to him. We scrimmage them every year. He does a really good job. So I call Greg Persino, and he gets us in. So it's actually great. As far as any MPEs I've been in since I've been here, this is my sixth year in Division One. They by far and away have the best fan support. Like if you see, I mean, you know, I've got a 14-year-old daughter that typically has gone to all these MTEs. I take my family to as many of those road trips that, you know, that are in nice places. So we've been to Alaska. Well, you know, that wasn't great fun for the girls because it was dark for 20 hours out of the day up in Alaska. I thought it was cool to go to Alaska. I'd never been there. We went to the Cayman Islands. I think my daughters would rather just go to the Cayman Islands every year. But that was a fun tournament to be at. But this one was more educational, they literally had over 5,000 people in the stands. Like they assigned elementary schools in Belfast, and we were in Northern Ireland, to each team, and then they'd bring in and cheer, and we went to the school when we got there and visited the school. So it was super cool. They had between like 5,000-6,000 fans in there. You know, basketball's becoming really big around the world, so they took this over there. And it's a long trip, but it's not terrible. It's 6 hours from here. We had a direct flight from Toronto into Dublin. It was like a 6-hour flight, which isn't the worst. So we went over there. Now, when we got into this tournament last year, we've got an academic called an academic performance specialist. He's a retired principal, a guy named Dick Hunt, that put together, and he actually teaches some courses here at UB as well, but he put together a history of Ireland course that our guys were going to get credit for. It ended up, I don't know what happened. They ended up not being able to get credit, so that was something with academics here or whatever. But we still went through with the course. So I had my guys meet with them once or twice a week, depending on the week and the travel schedule. And he went through all of the history of the split, Northern Ireland, Ireland, the whole deal. So when we got over there and we took the tours, they were already fully aware of everything. So I thought it was a lot better. It was a really educational type trip, and being a former teacher for 15 years, it was big. We were able to go somewhere and you don't just fly in and play 3 basketball games or 2 basketball games and get out. Like you actually went and embraced the culture, went to the elementary school, met with the kids, we went and saw the Titanic Museum, which was pretty cool. So it was a cool trip. And we got some good basketball in over there as well. I mean, San Francisco is really good. You know, that's a quality win for us. I think at the end of the day, that's going to end up being a quad one win. It was on a neutral site. I think that'll help us come March. So the tournament itself was really well run, and it was a great time while we were there in Northern Ireland.
Let's kind of move forward kind of quickly here. I want to talk to you about a number of things before we get through here. You mentioned you got three daughters. You didn't mention your wife, Crystal. She has a serious disease, lymphoma. I know you've gotten into that. You're trying to bring awareness to that type thing. What are some of the things that you've done as a family to try to bring some awareness to people in the Buffalo area?
Yeah, so she was diagnosed before I ever coached my first game here, my first year as a head coach, with double hit lymphoma. If you Google it, it's bad. When we found out exactly, we first found out she had cancer. That was an awful day to begin with. Then when you find out what type of cancer it is, that was maybe even worse because the success rates were not high. If you Google that, double hit lymphoma. Well, we were fortunate. We were in Buffalo. IED at the time, Danny White, made some calls, and we were able to get right into Roswell Park Cancer Institute, one of the top 50 cancer places in the country. They got us in right away, figured out exactly what type it is, and they were able to treat it. She ended up going through 6 rounds of inpatient chemo and then a bone marrow transplant. And it's been, this spring it'll be 3 years that she's free, cancer free. So it's looking very good, like she's beat it. I mean, she's in remission, whatever you want to call it. There's no sign of cancer on any of her CAT scans or anything. So we're fortunate. I mean, that's been a tough 2-3 years here in our life. We've been through a lot as a family, but I think, you know, God puts you through certain things for a reason. I think we can bring awareness, and, you know, we had a lot of coaches step up while we were going through it. Greg McDermott was unbelievable friend to our family. Him and my wife are still, I always take my wife to Vegas that last week of recruiting. He hangs out with her. And his wife went through a cancer bout while he was coaching. So he talked me through a lot of that stuff. We went and played Duke my first year, Coach K was really gracious. We wore all year. We wore the color for lymphoma is lime green. So we wore these lime green ribbons. Coach K wanted his entire staff to wear them. Jeff Capel reached out to me. So their staff's a little bigger than ours. I think we had 5 or 6 people wearing those. I think they had to ask for like 12 or 14 of the ribbons, but they wore them while we were at Duke. So you just see different coaches step up to the plate that have a bigger sounding board when they find out that you went through it. So we've in the past worn lime green shoes on the Coaches versus Cancer Suits and Sneakers Week just to bring awareness to her type. And then in Buffalo, you know, we'll do like they had a Tops 5K run where all the proceeds go to cancer. So I went and spoke at it, and they honored Crystal and our family at that this summer. And anytime Roswell asks us to do anything, they've got a bike ride here that they do every summer that raises a ton of money. Like if they ask us to participate, we're 100% all in to doing anything to help with the cancer research just because of what we've been through as a family.
Well, you give her our best, continued best. And I know she's doing really, really well and got a lot of local support there and certainly support from the family. A couple of more things. Recruiting challenges at Buffalo and how important is scheduling for a team like Buffalo, a mid-major that really needs to, you know, get some number one quad games scheduled and wins in order to get to the NCAA tournament?
Well, the recruiting challenges, I think, initially, when I got here as an assistant, there was no name. Like, there's no national name. We're trying to recruit. I'm not from Western New York. I'm trying to go back to Detroit, Milwaukee. So I really had to tell Bobby Hurley. Now, Bobby's got a name. Now, the kids we recruited didn't know Bobby, but all the dads did. So that got us in with some. Now that we've been able to get to the tournament, beat Arizona, won at West Virginia, you know, we've got more. We're in a ranked, like, 14th in the AP right now. Like, we've got a national name. So we don't have an issue recruiting anymore. We feel like we're able to get really high-quality kids. Buffalo's a real city. It's got an NFL team, an NHL team. People here are sports crazy, and they have no NBA team. You know, the Braves left a long time ago, so we're Buffalo's basketball team. So when people come here, they really get embraced by the city. So we've been able to build this in the 6 years I've been here as an assistant, as a head coach, to the point where I don't feel like we have any recruiting issues anymore. I think we're able to dispel some of the myths about, you know, people think we're in Canada or whatever. We're close, but Toronto's a great city. It takes you an hour and a half, whatever, to get there. It's actually a great place to be and live and go to school. As far as the scheduling goes, it's getting harder and harder. I mean, you've kind of climbed your way up the ladder. You've got a son that's at the mid-major level that after beating Virginia, I'm sure his scheduling's not easy either. Like, teams don't necessarily want to play you if they think they're going to get beat by you. And nobody's coming to Buffalo, no high major. So like this year, for instance, Southern Illinois was in a similar boat. Nobody wanted to play them. They got all their guys back. They're really good. So we ended up playing Southern Illinois a series in the same year, which is kind of unheard of for non-conference games. But I think more and more people are starting to do it. So we played at Southern already. They're coming back to our place Saturday this week, so we were able to do that. We had the West Virginia game, and scheduling is so important. Had we not had the West Virginia game on the schedule when it was, we wouldn't be ranked right now. Like, you have to beat quality teams to get recognition. If you can't get some of those quality teams to play you, you're just not going to get it. So, you know, Bob Huggins, my assistant Brian Hodgson, knew them well. They agreed to play the game. You know, in hindsight, maybe they think maybe they shouldn't have, but I think, you know, some of those coaches, Bob's not getting fired. Bob's done an unbelievable job everywhere he's been. He's from West Virginia. He can afford to play some pretty good teams. He's a great coach. He'll be in the Hall of Fame. So he agreed to play us, which is great. We went down there and were fortunate enough. CJ got really hot there late, scored 43, and we won. That kind of propelled us into the rankings. Now we've got Syracuse and Marquette still left on the schedule. Those are really quality games. But it's hard. It's hard to get a quality team to come here. It's hard to get neutral site games. That ideally, you'd be able to play some of these high majors on a neutral site. Those are not easy to get. So then you end up having to go to, you know, you get bought by these high majors, and you got to find high majors willing to buy you, which is becoming more and more difficult the more you win at this level. So, yeah, I mean, and it's becoming even more difficult now because the high majors are going to 20, 22-game conference seasons, so they have fewer and fewer games to actually play, so they're going to be more selective with those non-conference games. So, yeah, it's not easy scheduling at this level.
Let me tell you real quick a story. You know, when I was at Wake Forest, we'd recruited this kid named Tim Duncan. It was going into his second year, and I was in a developing friendship with John Beilein, who at that time was the head coach at Canisius. And, you know, I called him one day and I said, you know, I'd really like to bring my team to Buffalo. He said, why? I said, I'm not playing on your campus now, but there's an old building there, and I don't even know if it's still being used for basketball or not, called the Odd. And
yeah,
I said,
everybody talks about it here, yep.
Do they still play basketball there or not?
No, they don't.
That's a shame.
Big four here. Yeah. it was a cool environment from what everybody tells me.
Well, anyway, long story short, he says, yeah, I can get the game scheduled in the Odd because I like to take my team to places that, you know, have a lot of history. Not that any of my players would know about it, but I knew about it. So we go up there and we play, and we go up a day early and we, you know, work out on the floor. And, you know, they got these little holes all over the floor to keep it from sinking, you know, just get the air under there to hold it up. And we played a game, and it was a fairly close game early. We kind of pull away late, and when you dribble, there's a lot of dead places on the court. I had this kid, Randolph Childers.
Like Boston Garden.
Yeah. And so I had this kid, Randolph Childers, that was he was on my team at that time, and he and Duncan, and we win the game, and we go back, we get on the bus heading back to the airport that night. We got our charter flight back, and I hear Randolph in the back say, "Hey, Coach, tell us again about Dolph Shays and all of these guys that, you know, they couldn't have played on that sorry old court." I said, "Look, it's a win. And you just experienced history. You got all these great players that played there." Duncan just shaked his head, and we moved on. But John Beilein was kind of good enough to get us in there. All right, last thing.
Awesome.
What is the state of the game per Nate Oates? What are we looking at?
I think the game's in great shape. I mean, the game's getting faster. I just thought that, you know, there's stuff trickles down. The NBA does things, college coaches emulate that. You know, everybody thought 7 seconds or less, D'Antoni basketball with the Phoenix Suns was like, you know, changing the game. I just saw a tweet the other day. D'Antoni's Phoenix offense that year when he really created fast basketball, that would be the 30th fastest pace in the game. Now, your son just beat Virginia. There's still some coaches that are doing it really, really well at a high level that aren't playing, you know, at a tempo that's going up and down. But I think the game's getting more exciting for the fans. I think the fans are getting – the basketball is becoming a bigger deal in most places. Like, I love the way the game's going right now. If you just talk about the game itself and, like, where the game's going – I mean, look at a guy like you just mentioned, John Beilein. So I was back in Detroit. I coached in Detroit. I mean, I got a ton of respect for Tom Izzo. I went to a bunch of his practices, and I love the way he coaches. But then, I mean, John Beilein's not. I mean, he's never cheated on one thing a day in his life. I mean, you couldn't even get a Gatorade if you took a player over to a game there. They like nothing. Like, he would never. And he's doing it as well as anybody. Like, seriously. I mean, I used to take my team over to Michigan games a lot because I was right down the road in Romulus. Like, you know, I mean, he's not going to ever cheat on anything, and he's doing it at the highest level in the game right now. I mean, if you watch his teams, and he's doing it the right way. So I think it's proving to young coaches, you can do everything right. You can coach the right way and follow the rule, and you can win it at a really high level. Just, you got to do things the right way. So I love the way the game's going right now.
Game still, I don't care where you play, fast or slow, the game still comes down to fewest turnovers, give up no second shots, give them a shot, but make it a bad one and rebound the basketball. And sharing the thing. I mean, you just have to do that, and stopping your man. Don't let him get into the lane. And offensively, you know, I think that's probably the easiest thing to teach. People want to learn it, but those other things, getting to the free throw line, making your free throws. I saw a game last night where a team, they go 23 for 25 from the line. The other team goes 4 for 14. Which team do you think won?
Yeah, 20, yeah, exactly. Yeah, there you go. We talked about it a lot. We had that issue last year. We talked about ways we could improve. We fouled way too much. We're too aggressive. So we've corrected that this year. But I agree. I mean, you look, whether it's 40 years ago or today, there's a lot of similarities to what it takes to win a basketball game. If you're giving up free shots, and whether it's free throws or layups, you're going to lose most of your games, or offensive boards. Like, eliminate the easy buckets. Get as many easy buckets yourself as you can. If you're turning the ball over, you're obviously not getting a shot up. So we've been fortunate enough to do that in a style that I think kids like to play, so it helps recruiting a little bit that way too.
Well, Nate, I know you want to join me in thanking everyone for tuning in to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. And to you, Nate Oates, I appreciate everything that you're doing for the game, for the kids up in the Buffalo area, for basketball in general. Thank you for taking your time to be with us today. Good luck to you and your Bulls this season. A lot of fans are pulling for you. And I want to say to the fans, if they want to learn more about the NABC, all they have to do is visit the NABC.com.